Hi, everybody. This is Gary Sandy, and thank you very much for listening to the WKRP cast.
So just sit right down, relax, open your ears real wide, and say...
Weather today in the greater Cincinnati area.
Are you awake? Whoa! Are you awake now?
But the senator, while insisting he was not intoxicated, could not explain his nudity.
Say what?
Dear God, she's going to kill us all.
Welcome to the WKRP cast. My name is Donna Stair.
And I'm her husband, Alan. This is a week-by-week, episode-by-episode rewatch. We're getting into the music,
the trivia,
and the fun of WKRP.
So, fellow babies, don't touch that dial. It's time for the WKRP cast.
I'm at WKRP in Cincinnati.
Welcome back to another WKRP cast. This week, we're going to meet the family. What's our episode, Donna?
We are going to be talking about a family affair. The air date was January 7th, 1980. It was written by Tim Reed. Story editors Dan Gunselman, Steve Marshall, Stephen Campman, and PJ Tarakvi. Executive story consultant Blake Hunter. And it was directed by Rod Daniel. Andy's sister, Carol, is visiting Cincinnati. Andy sets her up on a blind date with Johnny, after kicking in a few dollars, of course. When Carol visits the radio station, she meets Venus, and they set up their own date. Andy doesn't approve, but why? Is it because Venus is late for his shift, or something else? Andy tries to prove he's not a racist, but he discovers that he might have a problem with his sister going out on the town with a black man.
First off, Happy New Year. This is our first episode of the 1980s. And did you notice our episode writer? It's Venus himself, the multi-talented Tim Reed, putting pen to paper. This is a huge episode for Tim. It's his first ever writing credit on his IMDb profile. It is one of only 9 writing credits he will notch throughout his career, and the first of 2 that he'll have on WKRP. He'll also get a story-by credit a little later on in the series.
Tim's career, as we've mentioned in the past, went far beyond acting. He started his own successful TV and movie production company in his home state of Virginia. He's performed extensively with 73 acting credits, but he's also written, directed, and he has 18 producer credits to his name.
Reed tells a great story about this episode in America's favorite radio station. He said WKRP was the first network sitcom to really take on racism outside of shows like All in the Family or The Jeffersons. His problem with All in the Family was the perspective. It was a look at racism from the point of view of the racist and how he needs to change. Also, the racism was overt, and the main characters could easily identify it and then push back against bad behavior. Reed thought that was too easy, and it was a topic that had already been done.
With this episode, Tim wanted to explore subtle racism, racism that sneaks into the behavior of people who don't even think they're racist. Andy is one of Venus's best friends, but Andy doesn't even consider Venus as a possible escort for his sister. When his sister does spend a day with Venus, Andy has anger issues that he can't quite explain.
Big bonus. In addition to hearing more of Tim's story about the episode, we also have comments from the young lady at the center of the controversy.
Hi, I'm Allison Argo, and many moons ago, I played the younger sister of Gary Sandy on WKRP. So I was a guest on WKRP for a week, and it was a lovely experience.
We'll be hearing more from Allison throughout the podcast.
Let's get into this episode. We start out in the studio. Johnny is on the air playing Lie to Me by the San Francisco band The Do-Rocks. Now, we've met The Do-Rocks a couple of times so far in the series. Their poster shows up at various points around the station, including at the top of the studio door during the scene. Our favorite bit of Do-Rock trivia? Durox was chosen as the name of the band because they are a breed of pig known for having sensitive ears and large genitals.
And that does not get old. Let's keep that poster coming, guys. Johnny goes into a talk bit about the time.
I want to tell you, it's 8:10 in the a.m. I told you the truth wouldn't help. That means it's wake up time. It's your last call for meaningful employment.
Then he does a lead in to one of those great WKRP fake commercials.
So you just got time to jump out of your jammies and pour yourself a nice hot steaming cup of
chemicals.
The chemicals ad is hilarious.
Mommy, are these green pork chops still good?
A few shows ago, the answer would have been an unfortunate no. But today, green meat is...
The whole chemicals ad is most likely a reference to a DuPont tagline that had been in use since 1935. Monster chemical company DuPont tagged all of their commercials with the phrase, "Better things for better living through chemistry." The phrase got shortened by comedians to "better living through chemistry" as a jokey reference to recreational drug use. DuPont dropped the phrase "through chemistry" from the tag in 1982, probably because of all the jokes.
Andy enters the studio as Johnny turns down the commercial. Andy's needing something. He's working hard to butter Johnny up, and wow, is he transparent when he does this.
John, allow me to just take a moment here, sir, to say to you, A, what a special human being you are, and B, what a wonderful job you continue
Travis.
To do.
Andy asks if Johnny is in the market for a favor.
Giving or taking.
Johnny comes out of the commercial and tags it.
None of these apples have ugly brown spots.
That's right, and they won't, even long after the apples are unsafe to eat.
Chemicals. A natural part of life.
Now, had you been listening in 1980, you would have heard Johnny go into Foxy Lady by Jimi Hendrix right here. But Shout Factory wasn't able to get clearance for the Hendrix. Their fix, skip over it. This is what it sounded like on CBS in January of 1980, the original.
Chemicals. A natural part of life. Only no longer. I can take Jimi Hendrix forever.
John?
Andrew?
Hey, let's talk fun.
Let's not.
Hey, you're a good-looking guy.
And thanks to Dale Kovar, the Big D, for letting us use that clip from his recreated diss. Now, with the Shout Factory edit, what you wind up with is this.
Chemicals. A natural part of life.
Hey, let's talk fun.
Let's not.
Hey, you're a good-looking guy. Now, as you know, my sister...
They just skipped it, which was not a bad way to handle this kind of missing sound cue. They probably should have done this more often instead of using the generic replacement clips.
Foxy Lady is one of Jimmy's best-known songs. It comes from the 1967 debut album Are You Experienced? By the Jimi Hendrix Experience.
Rolling Stone named Foxy Lady number 153 of the 500 greatest songs of all time.
Aw, shucks, Foxy Lady.
Andy is still rolling into this pitch about whatever it is he's wanting from Johnny.
Hey, let's talk fun.
Let's not.
Hey, you're a good-looking guy. Now, as you know, my sister's in town, and I've been showing her around for about 4 days now, having a great time. Why? Because she's a lot of fun.
Swell.
But I'm her brother, so I was wondering if maybe you could...
Oh, Travis, give me a break. Huh?
Andy is wanting to set Johnny up with his kid's sister. She's been in town for a few days, but it's not much fun hanging around with your brother. Andy thinks Johnny would be a great tour guide, and he's willing to pay.
How can you do that, man? How can you put a dollar value on your sister's company? And more importantly, how much?
Andy kind of starts low. He's negotiating, but it looks like he's willing to go as high as $40 for the night. This gets Johnny's attention. But he isn't completely sold on the idea. Johnny's wanting more of a description.
Oh, she's cute. She's charming. She's fun company.
Mm-hmm. What does she look like?
Like me.
50. You got it.
And he got 50 out of it. We've got another poster watch. Let's go from top to bottom on the studio door. We've got three posters stacked. The top one is, of course, the Doo-Rocks Pig Butt poster for their self-titled debut album. We heard the Doo-Rocks at Fade Up.
The middle poster is a Nicolette Larson promo poster for her second studio album, 1979's In the Nick of Time. In the episode Jennifer's Home for Christmas, you can see the bottom half of this poster. The top half is covered by snowman legs.
In the Nick of Time didn't chart in the U.S., but it did hit number 35 on the Australian album charts.
There was a significant Doobie Brothers influence to this album. She had a duet with Michael McDonald on the single Let Me Go Love. And Tom Johnston also sang backing vocals on several cuts.
Moving on down, the bottom poster on the door is from an LA band called The Pop. This is their 1979 label debut on Arista titled Go.
The Pop had a previous album on indie label Automatic that was said to be more raw and rocking than this album.
Arista label head Clive Davis wanted to position Pop as a competitor to The Cars. It never worked out. This was their only major label release.
Thanks to Michael Hernandez, the accountant of rock, for identifying the Pop poster for us.
As Johnny Nabs of 50 from Andy, that's our cold open, and we're into our theme song.
WKRP in Cincinnati.
We come back from commercial break in the lobby where we find Art sitting at Jennifer's desk. He's getting a tutorial from Jennifer on how to operate the phone.
It's very, very simple.
Six buttons?
No, actually, there are just five buttons. This little red one here on the end is used to put people on hold. Oh. My personal favorite.
Jennifer, we find out, is taking the day off to go shopping.
Now, this seems a little odd. Jennifer is leaving the episode, and quickly. Allison Argo said that she remembers there being a reason for Jennifer's quick exit.
Lonnie had some sort of gig, I think, in Las Vegas that week. So they'd written her very lightly in the show. And so I never met her until the day that we were taping, I'm pretty sure. And she came in just at the very last minute. She was in hair and makeup and I just remember her being so warm and gracious, just like, oh, so nice to meet you. Welcome to WKRP. And da-da-da-da-da. So we got to definitely meet backstage, and she was very, very gracious. And I remember she was reading her fan mail and said it always made her feel better.
We put L.A. Jamie Schmidt and Michael, the accountant of rock, Hernandez, on the case to find out what Lonnie was up to that week. Turns out Ms. Anderson had a busy November of 1979. She was taping a week of shows, guest hosting with Mike Douglas the first week of the month. Douglas used to tape delay by a day right there in Hollywood, so she could easily have been free by the Friday show taping.
We also found Lonnie hosting a Christmas special from the Grand Ole Opry the week of November 19th of 1979. The show had a live audience on the night of Wednesday, the 21st. It was being shot for air in December. The next day, November 22nd, was Thanksgiving. We don't think WKRP would have been in production that week due to the holiday.
Lonnie was definitely busy, but we couldn't find anything putting Lonnie in Vegas in November of 79. Allison wasn't positive as to Vegas being the why. She just knew Lonnie had to be gone for the week, and that's why we get the quick exit.
We did find a Vegas connection in this story. Her co-host for the Nashville special was Robert Urich, and he was playing Dan Tana in the series Vegas at the time.
As Jennifer puts on her long fur coat, Art tells her to have a good time. Then he gets a thought.
Oh, Jennifer, what if the call's for me?
Oh, don't be an old silly.
The phone rings, and it's for Jennifer. Carlson tells the person that Jennifer is not here. He tells them that she's gone shopping.
Shoes, I think.
He learns that the call is from New York and asks if he can take a message.
I couldn't tell her anything like that. I'll have to hang up.
A young woman walks into the lobby and clears her throat. Art jumps up to greet her. As he's asking if he can help her, the phone rings. Art answers. The phone rings again. Carlson is punching buttons, and he's getting flustered as the phone continues ringing.
Well, look, we all make mistakes. I don't think there's any cause to use that kind of language. Yeah, well, so are you.
Carlson turns his attention back to the young woman. She introduces herself.
So, I am Carol Travis, Andy's sister.
Ah, Andy who? Oh, Travis, yeah.
Well, I'm Arthur Carlson, and I'm in charge here.
Hey, that's our guest, Allison Argo, playing Carol Travis. Allison had already been in Hollywood for a couple of years at this time, but her acting chops were established well before her move to California.
I actually started acting in my childhood in a small summer stock theater on Cape Cod. So I was raised on the stage, and so it was really second nature to me. And then I moved to New York.
New York was a great springboard for Allison's acting career.
I did a year on Search for Tomorrow, which was an old soap opera, and three plays on Broadway, and lots of television and radio commercials. So I did really well in New York, but I felt that the next step was to try television.
As we've heard before, making it in Hollywood can come down to your agent. Allison's experience on Broadway meant she was able to attract top-flight representation out in California.
I was really lucky because I was a serious actor from New York, having done these Ibsen and Tennessee Williams on Broadway. I was able to get a great agent at the Creative Artists Agency. And that really opened up doors in a wonderful, easy way.
So many of the guest stars we've talked to don't remember the WKRP audition process. Allison had the same experience.
I don't remember auditioning for WKRP, but I don't think it was a long, involved process. I think it was like, yeah, she's great for the part. Yep, boom, done.
But also, like so many others, Allison has fond memories of her time on the WKRP set.
Yeah, so I showed up for the first rehearsal, and I don't remember a lot except that it was just so fun and easy and warm. And the cast was just so absolutely just lovely and embracing. It was just a really, really pleasant experience.
Allison says she felt the same sense of welcoming described by Marcus Isolio and Christian Seaborn.
It was a very special, warm, inviting, inclusive set. It was a real honor and such fun to be part of that.
Carol tells Carlson that it looks like they keep him very busy. Carlson tries to explain that these aren't his normal duties.
Oh, well, I don't do what I'm doing here. Usually what I do in there. But the lady that does hear what I'm doing here isn't here, and so I'm actually doing what she does here instead of in there.
He says he's getting a taste of what it's like in the trenches.
Carol nods and says it's like frontline action, being there with the troops.
That's it, exactly. And that's why I'm not embarrassed about any of this.
Okay, listen, Herb, come walking through the door from the hallway. Herb is on crutches and a bit grumpy.
Don't touch me, Les, and I mean it.
Les tells Herb that he's sorry.
Herb's crutches are a nod to Frank Bonner's parasailing injury. If you listened to Mike Fright, you know about Frank's real accident. In the book, America's Favorite Radio Station, Michael Castle reports that Family Affair is the first episode of the show where Herb is back after his fall in the dry bed of Lake Mirage. As we discovered talking to Christian Seaborn, That's not true. We'd like to offer a correction.
This is the first episode where they admit to the accident. Frank Bonner fell on Sunday, October 14th. That Friday, October 19th, was the shoot date for Mike Fright. Christian Seaborn told us Herb couldn't move during the Mike Fright shoot. He'd spent the first part of that week in the hospital. The rest of the cast was even told to not bump him. He was in so much pain. Frank Bonner stayed seated through the episode and appeared to be almost immobile.
Now this episode, Family Affair, shot on either November 2nd or the 9th. 3 weeks on, Frank seems to be feeling a lot better after his real fall. Enough so that he can make fun of it as Herb's fall.
And now a special look at this episode's bandage placement for the 5-time Buckeye NewsHawk Award winner, Les Nessman. This is the Les Nessman Bandage Report. Now, here's Donna Stair with her report about Les Nessman.
Side of left hand, including the pinky.
This has been a look at the bandage placement for Silver Sow and Copper Cob award-winning journalist Les Nessman. So Art walks to Herb and asks him what happened.
Herb fell from the sky, big guy. Now he's trying to blame me for everything.
Herb expands on what happened.
We went out to do Bailey's hang gliding promotion yesterday. You know, where I go up in the air in the fish suit. Oh. Well, this jerk here is driving the car that's pulling me. I get about 20 feet off the ground, and he decides to stop for a stop sign.
This tells him it's the law. Herb starts yelling at Les.
Now, Carlson grabs Herb by the arm, telling him that there's someone that they both need to meet. Carlson drags Herb over to Carol, and Herb is desperately trying to keep up, sidestepping on crutches.
He looks like a crab skittering sideways across there.
Herb is grimacing in pain. Carlson introduces them to Carol.
Little Travisette, huh?
A little Travisette? Carol tells him that she's heard a lot about them both. Carlson asks them to take her back to Andy's office.
Oh, I'm in a lot of pain, Carol.
Really?
Yeah, but my head's clear and I thank God for that.
The three of them head back towards Andy's office. We noticed that Herb mentions his clear head a couple of times in the episode. We're wondering if he might have had a couple of weeks of painkillers prior to this where his head maybe wasn't so clear.
Yeah, he mentions it a couple of times. We started to notice it, that he talks about it. So the phone rings. Art rushes over to answer it.
I'm sorry, but Arthur Carlson's not in. No, he's in Washington, lunching with the head of the FCC. Sure, it's silly, but that's where he is.
He hangs up the phone, and he's got this great proud look to himself standing there behind the desk.
Now, Allison is playing Andy's kid sister, but she's an adult. At the time of the shooting, Allison was 25 years old. She would be 26 in December, but she didn't look it.
The one interesting moment that really stands out that I guess I'll never forget is that we were in dress rehearsal. So we'd gone through the blocking and, you know, the earlier rehearsals. Now it was dress rehearsal. And so we'd been through hair and makeup and we were all in our, you know, costumes, our wardrobe. In the middle of one of my early scenes, the voice of the director came over the PA and said, let's hold for a minute. We need to do something. She looks so young.
Her acting wasn't the issue. She'd been killing it in rehearsals. It was her look. Director Rod Daniel decided they could fix it in hair and makeup.
I always looked very young, and apparently I looked like I maybe was even underage. And they suddenly were worried that that was throwing a whole nother spin on the episode. So they sent me back into hair and makeup. They said, do something, make her look older. And they poofed out my hair and put on more makeup. And I remember I felt like Dolly Parton. It wasn't, now looking at the episode, it wasn't that bad, but I've always been a very natural sort of tomboy. And so it was very odd to have this big, you know, poofy hairdo and all this makeup. But there was this last minute, you know, very strong concern that I looked like, you know, I was underage.
That big poof of hair was not Allison's usual style. She says it may have helped sell the idea that Carol looks like Andy.
It certainly did look like I could have been his younger sister. Absolutely. And you're right. The hairdo was very similar. I don't remember that being discussed. And honestly, I don't remember what my hair looked like. Probably I looked a bit more like Bailey, like Jan Smithers, you know, just much more natural with the bangs and long hair. But once they got done with me, I definitely looked like, I mean, that is some hairdo that Gary. So, the wardrobe, too, is just so fun to look at that retro, you know, 40 years ago, the high waist. And it's such a hoot.
We move into the bullpen where we find Bailey talking to Vina. She is trying to convince him to do the hang gliding promotion while wearing the fish costume. He asks her why she doesn't do it.
Well, what would that prove? People want to see a star.
Bailey really is laying it on thick, trying to set the stage by describing to him how it would look and feel if he did this promotion.
You'll be flying way up high in the air. Your hair will be flowing in the breeze.
Love the look Venus gives her when
she says
that.
And he does this great pivot, this neck pivot coming around there. She tells him again that she wants a star up there. Venus asks if it's dangerous, and I'm thinking Herb's walking around the station somewhere on crutches, but Bailey tells him it's not. She seems to gloss right over Herb's fall. Venus says, he'll think about it.
Andy enters with Venus's playlist from last week. Andy says Venus isn't playing enough hits.
I don't play hits, I make them.
Andy tells him this is a top 40 station. WKRP plays the hits. Venus asks Andy if he's talked with Johnny.
I thought I'd talk to someone from our solar system first.
Of course he's not going to go to Johnny first. Bailey catches Andy as he passes by her. She's throwing the pitch on him now.
Picture yourself flying way up high in the air. Your hair is flowing in the breeze. Now that stuff will flow.
Yeah, that will flow. Andy tells her not now and walks away. Bailey leaves the bullpen. She's headed to talk with Johnny.
Venus tells Andy he must think he plays too many black songs. Andy disagrees.
Come on, Venus. This has nothing to do with race and you know it. Play something white.
Venus tells him that he plays the best music.
Music has no color.
Les enters the bullpen with Andy's sister. As Les and Carol enter, Les slams the door right in Herb's face. You hear the door crash into Herb's crutches.
See him push it.
Oh, yeah, Les just swings that thing, and Herb's got to be feeling better. He stands there staring through the door with this great look of disgust. So Les introduces Carol to Venus. Les does this pause.
This is Venus Flytrap, and he's a...
And you never know how Les is going to end a sentence when he does a pause like that. I'm glad Les didn't skitter off into something embarrassing.
A disc jockey.
And especially with Venus.
Yeah, always with Venus. You never know where he's going to go with that. So Venus stands up.
Oh, Travis, this must be the A side of the family, huh?
Venus is referencing a 45 single. A single always had the good song on the A side. The least popular songs on any album would go on the B-sides of singles.
Herb hobbles in on his crutches.
Guess what happened to me this weekend?
You know, he may as well not even be there because no one acknowledges him at all. Venus continues talking to Carol, asking if she's enjoying herself in Cincinnati. Carol starts listing the touristy stuff that they've done.
So far we've seen Kings Island, the zoo, and then on Sunday we watched a whole bunch of football games on Andy's TV set.
Oh, Carol mentioned Kings Island. We've been there. Had a lot of fun. A 360-acre amusement park located about 24 miles northeast of Cincinnati in Mason, Ohio.
It opened in 1972 and features 14 roller coasters.
14 very cool roller coasters. It also has a 33-acre water park.
Quick poster watch. The Funkadelic poster we saw in the studio is now in the hallway outside of the bullpen. This is the poster for Funkadelic's 11th studio album, Uncle Jam Wants You. It was the follow-up to One Nation Under a Groove. The cover cover photo is George Clinton wearing a Black Panther-style beret, sitting in an oversized wicker chair. Uncle Jam peaked at number 18 on the U.S. album chart.
And he admits he's not a very good tour guide. Les says he is. And he starts showing off his part of the bullpen.
This is the award-winning news.
Herb hobbles over to his desk. He's looking for pity.
Better sit down. I'm in a great deal of pain, especially after what happened to me this weekend.
But then Andy gives in and asks what happened. And Herb now tries to be tough, tells him, it was nothing. He'd rather not talk about it. He makes a big scene. He's grimacing. He's moaning as he sits down. Andy says okay and starts to leave with Carol.
Travis Les tried to kill me. Tell me about it.
And if you check the wall above the bookcase, we see the Blondie gold record. We're tracking this gold record. It's already been on the air during Jennifer's Home for Christmas. This episode was shot the week before Jennifer's Home for Christmas, so they seem to have been given the gold record sometime in early November. Parallel Lines was certified gold in April of 1979 and was certified platinum in June. WKRP never got a platinum copy of the album.
And he finally gives in and he asks Herb to tell him about what happened over the weekend. So now Andy's suddenly tied up. He turns and just very quickly asks Venus,
Venus, will you show Carol around the station?
Herb angrily looks at Les.
Herb fell down and went boom.
Les is enjoying this a lot. He smiles, looking at Herb. Herb loses it. He's about to come out of the chair at Les.
Suddenly, all of the phones begin ringing at once. We're reminded that the big guy is working the phones today. Les, Herb, and Andy, they're all trying to answer, but the phones keep ringing.
We transition into the hallway outside the studio where Venus is walking Carol down the hallway. He points into the studio saying, hey, there's Johnny Fever on the air. Venus then points out the windows to the Ohio River, Riverfront Stadium, and the Negman Building.
And there's a man exercising in a nude, moving right along.
When Venus pointed out the Negman Building, this was a callback you might remember from Les on a Ledge.
That was a Mr. Nice in the Negman Building across the street. He wanted to know if that was you out on the ledge.
Venus is being very charming on this tour.
And he's not even having to try hard.
Oh, no.
Venus
he's
is
smooth.
Just so smooth. He's oozing charm. They're both laughing, and Venus asks if she's having a nice time. She says it's been boring. Well, Venus tells her he'll show her around, take her to all the hot spots. He asks if she likes to roller skate.
Oh, well, I haven't done it since I was a little kid.
Well, let's go.
You're serious?
Well, he tells her they're going to go right now.
What if I fall down or something?
I'll roll over you.
Oh, nice guy.
We transition to an exterior shot, and we can see now it's nighttime. And we're hearing the start of Les doing what I think is his final cast of the day. And I think Les gets darker and more conspiratorial as the sun goes down. Because, man, he is getting into a major conspiracy theory regarding the upcoming 1980 Summer Olympics.
Why are the Olympics being held in Russia?
Les may have had a premonition. This is January of 1980. We're still about 6 months away from the Olympics. It turns out the U.S. boycotted the 1980 Summer Olympics. We didn't go, along with 66 other countries, and it had nothing to do with the water.
What about the water?
It was because of Russia's involvement in the Afghan War.
How do we know they will report the Olympic scores faithfully?
Andy enters the studio and he asks where Venus is. Les says he doesn't know. Well, Andy's worried because Venus has been gone all day with his sister.
Right now, I think your main concern is Venus. He's supposed to be on the air in 7 seconds. Six. Five. Four.
Andy scrambles to the controls and he plays a liner. He grabs a record off of the shelf. We can see that it's Helen Reddy's Greatest Hits.
That's vicious of Les to do that to Andy, to
yes.
start counting it down. So Andy opens the mic and he announces that Apollo Flytrap, Venus's good friend, will be taking over.
Yes, this is the lead back soul sound. Let's
listen to some really heavy rhythm and blues. Once again, this is the laid-back soul sound of WKRP in Cincinnati.
We're not sure what Andy's trying to do here, but it is not working. And I love Andy being able to get to do a bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he usually doesn't get the chance to do bits. So now Gary Sandy's getting to have some fun here with some bits. His accent is hilarious. It sounds like a weird Lawrence Welk impersonation.
With a speech impediment.
With a little, yeah, the whole voiceover is so cringy. But then Andy hits play on the turntable. And the ultimate button to that voiceover is...
I am woman, hear me roar. In numbers too big to ignore, and I know too much to go back and pretend.
This was an early anthem for female empowerment written by Helen Reddy and Ray Burton.
Reddy did a first recording of this song on her debut album in 1971. They had her re-record the song for the single.
The single came out in May of 1972 and went to number one on the Hot 100.
Bailey comes into the studio. She's working a long day. Andy asks where Venus is. Bailey very calmly says she doesn't know. Andy tells Bailey Venus should be on the air right now. That's when Bailey starts to panic. She asks Andy...
You want me to go get a substitute type guy?
Andy tells her yes, that would be very helpful. Bailey runs out.
Carlson enters the studio and begins telling Andy what a rough day it's been, answering calls.
Sometimes all five of those buttons lit up at once.
He tells Andy that he's just beginning to appreciate the job that Jennifer has been doing. He refers to the lobby as the Nerve Center, Information Central, and that none of them should forget it.
Art is entirely clueless, isn't he? Andy is just rushing around. He's pulling albums. He's pulling carts. He's trying to get a show together.
Right.
Art's ignoring it. So Andy bought himself a little time with the song, but he's got work to do. He tells Art he's busy and asks if there's something specific he wants to talk to him about.
Well, then Carlson remembers that he has a message from Venus, but he can't read his own writing. He does see that the message says to tell Andy he won't be in tonight. Andy asks why not.
I don't remember.
Andy's getting upset. Carlson tells him that he answered some 48 calls out there. Andy asks what time Venus called.
It's not on there.
Andy asks if it says where they are, what they're doing.
Nope, that's it.
Art tells Andy that he is going home to take a hot shower.
If Jennifer ever walks out on me like this again, I'm quitting.
Art leaves the studio. Andy fades out, I Am Woman, and in that strange Apollo flytrap voice of his.
Yes, and the middle sound just keep on coming in. Hey, let's get... funky.
Andy then hits the play button on Joan Baez and The Night They Drove Old Dixie Down. This is a classic, but it's probably not a song that would appeal to Venus's audience.
The Night They Drove Old Dixie Down was written by Robbie Robertson, the leader of the band.
It was recorded and released in 1969 with LaVon Helm doing the lead vocals.
Virgil Caine is the name. Served on the Danville train.
The song is a first-person narrative from the viewpoint of a poor white Southerner during the last year of the Civil War. I'm sorry, that's not funny. But the fact that they're
fact
playing
that
this song.
Playing
yes.
It is what makes it so funny.
For Venus's shift.
The band's version was never a hit. It was released as the B-side to Up on Cripple Creek. The Joan Baez version, what we're hearing Apollo play, peaked at number 3 on the Hot 100 in October of 1971.
Dixie Down is listed as number 245 on Rolling Stone's list of the 500 greatest songs of all time.
And we leave the studio. I kind of wish we were going to hear some more of the show. So it's about an hour later, we find out. Andy comes walking into the lobby. He's done covering for Venus. The substitute is in. He's about ready to leave when the phone rings.
Yes, sir. The DJ on the air tonight was black. He just grew up in an all-white neighborhood. He's having a tough time working things out. Yeah. Okay, I'll tell him.
But at least somebody was listening.
He had listeners.
Yes.
I'd have stayed. I'd have been there.
Johnny walks into the lobby, ready for the date with Andy's sister. Andy tells Johnny that she's out with a Venus.
I usually date girls three times before they start dating other guys.
Poor Johnny.
Andy said that they're not dating. He thinks they are lost.
Oh, no, they're not. I've been blown out of the saddle again.
Johnny tells Andy that he is not giving back the $50. But Andy tells him, oh, yes, he is.
And we did the inflation calculator. That's about $200 that Johnny's hanging on to there. So Venus and Carol come walking into the lobby laughing and in a great mood. They've had a great day. Andy asks them where they've been.
We had so much fun.
And then Carol sees Johnny and she says, hi. They haven't been introduced yet.
Now, we play a little game of pass the prop here. Johnny hands Carol some flowers. He brought them for their supposed date. Andy grabs the flowers from Carol. Then Johnny grabs them back, saying they're his. He starts to hand them to Carol, and then he decides to hand them to Venus instead.
Wasn't ready for that.
No.
So Andy, looking at Venus, asks where they've been.
Around. What's the problem, man? I called in enough time to get a substitute. Who was that guy anyway?
Who was that guy?
Andy explains it was him. He had to do the first hour of the show. Carol said they'd been listening.
That's why we came over. Boy, do you stink.
Spoken as only a little sister could.
Yeah. Which brings us to...
the line of the episode.
Sound like Samurai Negro.
I don't even really know what that means, but it's hilarious.
It works.
It is hilarious.
Andy tells Venus that he asked him to show Carol around the station, not the state. Andy says that he got Carol a date with...
This guy right here.
Hi.
Andy's hitting Johnny in the chest with the back of his hand as he says this. You can hear it thumping.
He's hitting him hard.
Andy's upset, but he seems more upset than he should be. Venus gets a bit defensive.
What's wrong with your sister being out with me?
Andy tells him there's nothing wrong with it, but...
You didn't call.
It sounds a little weak as an excuse. Venus said he did call.
I didn't get the message.
That's Carlson's fault.
Andy's objections aren't adding up in Venus's mind.
Venus asks Andy what the real problem is here. Anyway, Andy tells him he's late. That's all. Johnny steps between them.
Hey, come on, you guys.
Always the peacemaker.
Yeah. Venus shoves the flowers back at Johnny and actually hits him in the face with them. Johnny takes the flowers and hands them to Carol. Carol tells Andy she's not his kid's sister anymore.
You can't tell me what to do.
You stay out of this, Carol. I know why you don't want me to go out with your sister, you know.
Well, Johnny is desperate to calm things down.
Come on, guys. Why don't we sing, huh? You know, a sing-along.
Andy tells Venus that's not the reason, but Venus thinks it is. Johnny can't stand the conflict. He's like a kid trying to keep mom and dad from fighting.
Viva Las Vegas! Come on, you guys know it, huh?
And he's doing it with the
motions.
Air guitar and everything. So Viva Las Vegas was originally released as a single in 1964 by Elvis Presley from the soundtrack for the movie of the same name.
Oh, there's blackjack and poker and the roulette wheel. A fortune won and lost on every deal. All you need is a strong heart and a nerve of steel.
Viva Las Vegas. Viva Las Vegas.
The B-side was What'd I Say, also from the film. Viva Las Vegas peaked at number 29 on the Hot 100, but the B-side charted separately at number 21.
Although this has become one of those iconic tunes associated with the King, Elvis never performed it live, even when he was performing in Las Vegas.
Viva Las Vegas!
Carol tells Andy that Venus was really nice to her.
Oh, well, I apologize.
Andy is not sounding very sincere. Johnny is still in smooth things over mode. He suggests getting pizza.
I got 50 bucks. That'll buy a lot of pizza.
That's a lot of pizza.
Carol says that she's up for some pizza.
I don't feel like it. Neither do I.
Johnny has to get away from the Venus and Andy tension. He pulls Carol out the door, telling her she'll like the place they're going.
And this has become a regular set now. We're back in the Ohio bar, run by Snooki.
Good old Snooki.
Yeah. Johnny and Carol are sitting at a table. Snooki is clearing what's left of their pizza. They've been there a while. The song we hear on the jukebox is Coward of the County by Kenny Rogers.
Now, this song was written by Roger Bowling and Billy Ed Wheeler.
It was released in November of 1979, so very recent to shooting this episode.
Everyone considered him the coward of the county. He'd never stood one single time to prove the county wrong.
Coward of the County became a huge crossover hit. It went to number one on the country chart and peaked at number three on the Hot 100. Johnny tells Carol that Andy is under a lot of pressure. He's trying to make up excuses for Andy's behavior. And she says she knows. Carol tells Johnny that Andy loves Venus. They've been friends for years. Johnny tells her it's just a little misunderstanding. Well, Carol thinks it's racial, but is it really? She doesn't think her brother is a bigot.
We're all bigots, okay? Bigotry started a long time ago. Nobody knows where. I think the French started it.
As Johnny continues his explanation, Venus and Andy walk in.
Venus apologizes to Carol, and then Andy apologizes, and they both look like they're kicking dirt in front of him, saying that he's even sorrier than Venus. They begin to argue about who is sorrier.
Sorrier than he is.
No, you're not.
I am.
Johnny asks them to sit down. Carol asks them if they're friends again.
They pull up chairs to the table, and Venus and Andy turn their chairs around backward and straddle them to sit down. Their unison answers are hilarious.
Oh, yeah. You see, I was just really mad because Venus didn't show up for his show.
When in fact, what he was worried about is his sister going out with the black guy.
Which is what Venus thinks.
And what Andy won't admit.
Because it's nuts.
But it's true.
Are you sure you guys got this thing straightened out? Oh, yeah.
Finally, Andy admits Venus is right. Andy says he thought they put all that black and white junk behind them. Venus makes a pretty profound statement.
We cut down a tree, but the roots run pretty deep.
Venus tells Andy he has those feelings, too. He points to Johnny.
You think I want my sister to go out with that guy there?
What did I do? Well, Venus, that's not race. That's just good taste.
Venus jokingly says that he's not really black. He's more cocoa brown. And he looks at Carol and tells her she's beige.
But that dude is white. Now that's white.
He's pointing at Johnny.
Johnny says he's just pale. And now they're ganging up on him. The jukebox transitions to a new song.
Well, now there is a good song.
Should I Come Home or Should I Go Crazy by Gene Watson?
It was written by Joe Allen and released in September of 1979.
It reached number three on the country chart. Andy tells Venus that he and Carol should dance.
Venus, dance with my sister.
Andy is really adamant about this dancing thing. He might be going a little too far in the other direction trying to prove he's not a racist.
This just doesn't seem like a dancing kind of bar.
No, it really doesn't.
I want to dance.
Johnny says it's not a good idea. Andy tells him he doesn't mind. Andy isn't getting it. This isn't about him. Venus says he knows he's not a bigot and it's okay. Andy insists that they dance, even though Johnny tells him that dancing is out. Andy won't let it go.
Venus, dance with my sister.
Although they don't really want to, Carol and Venus get up to dance. They just want Andy to shut up about the whole thing. Venus is picking up some negative connotations from Andy's insistence on getting the two of them to dance.
Don't dance now, balls.
How can I dance to that music, man? That's not music.
Andy reminds him music has no color. Andy looks pleased, but he's really forcing the issue.
No racial problems here.
Now, behind Andy, we see this big guy get up and walk toward the dance floor where Venus and Carol are laughing and they're holding hands as they're dancing. It's not in the show credits, but this guy is listed on IMDb as the redneck.
Don Pulford is playing the redneck. He was born in Los Angeles in 1936.
He began acting in 1956 as an uncredited extra in Around the World in 80 Days.
Don has 27 credits as an actor, but 60 credits as a stuntman.
He started doing stunts in 1972 on the streets of San Francisco.
He did his last stunt job in 2001 at the age of 65.
He has worked as a stunt double for both Nick Nolte and William Shatner. I can see the Nick Nolte.
Yeah, very definitely. They're going to have to work on the hair, I think, with the Shat stuff. The redneck jerks Carol's hand out of Venus's hand and confronts Venus, stepping between them. Things get intense fast.
Just what the hell do you think you're doing, boy?
Who are you calling boy?
This girl's white.
I'm beige.
Boy.
Well, I'll take care of this. Who are you calling boy, boy?
No, I can handle this.
I'll handle it. Let me handle it.
No, I'm the boy here. I'll handle this.
Johnny, always the peacemaker, comes over and tries to calm the situation. Redneck winds up and hauls off with a right cross, punching Johnny in the face. Now we see Venus and Andy lean back out of the way, and that's why he hits Johnny. Johnny falls on a table, causing it to collapse.
Venus and Andy don't hesitate after Johnny goes down. They both punch the redneck at the exact same time. This was not in Tim Reed's original draft of the script. He tells the story in America's Favorite Radio Station. The original script had Venus knocking out the redneck on his own. CBS said no. They had real trouble with a black man punching a white man in primetime, even if the white man was a jerk and the punch was justified.
Tim Reed said he would withdraw the script if Venus didn't get to throw the punch. He was not going to have a white man come along and defend a black man. It didn't sit well with him. The decision to have both throw the punch together came from the WKRP writer's room. It was a compromise that worked. Tim Reed was good with it because Venus was involved in his own defense, and the network was good with it because it was a shared decision between both characters.
Script discussions had us wondering about the dual roles of actor Tim Reed and writer Tim Reed. We asked Allison Argo if Tim was being consulted about script issues on the set.
But I do remember that Tim was, you know, super, super nice and intelligent, and I don't remember script huddles or anything like that.
She says she does realize the importance of this script, especially in retrospect.
Looking back at the episode, I just think it's a wonderful episode with such an important message. And I really applaud Tim for bringing that to WKRP. I really appreciate that episode, and I'm sort of honored to have been part of it.
Now we're ready for our capper scene, and we go to the lobby. Jennifer walks into the lobby wearing a different fur than the one she left in at the beginning of the episode. I think this is the next morning.
Yeah, it's the next day. You got to have a different fur. It's a new day.
Sure. Carlson runs out of his office thrilled to see her, but his voice is hoarse. He tells Jennifer he lost his voice from answering so many phone calls. Jennifer asked if anything happened while she was gone.
No, business as usual.
Art wasn't aware of the out-of-office activity happening the day before.
Herb comes in, still on crutches. Jennifer was not aware of his accident. Andy then walks in with a bandage across his nose, and it looks bad. I think he broke his nose. Followed by Venus, who has his hand wrapped. Then Johnny comes from the studio in a neck brace, and this has a great choreography
like
to
a
it.
Parade of the injured.
Yeah, the way they keep moving through the lobby around Jennifer. So Johnny pours himself a mug of coffee, and Jennifer asks Johnny, "What happened yesterday?"
Andy's sister stopped by for a while.
And she was a tornado.
The WKRP fish comes walking into the lobby, and we find out that Bailey's inside when she takes the head of the fish off. She's wearing a helmet. She obviously couldn't find anyone to do the hang gliding promotion. She says hi to Jennifer and leaves. Jennifer's left sitting at her desk, confused and a bit unnerved as the scene fades to black.
That's the end of the episode, but we had a couple more questions for Allison Argo before we go. Like, did you ever get recognized as having been on WKRP?
People are still, my friends who are not in the acting or television profession, are still, when they find out that I was on WKRP, are still so excited by that because it was such a beloved show that it's still sort of a fun little piece of trivia from my past.
Allison says she was most recognized for a year she spent on the soap opera Search for Tomorrow.
I was most recognized after having been on a soap opera for a year, and I played the bad girl, Cindy French. And I could go visit, I have relatives in the South, so I'd go down to Alabama and, you know, sit at a coffee shop. And the waitress just kept giving me dirty looks and wouldn't wait on me. Or I could be in a grocery store in the checkout line and an elderly woman would come up and say, Cindy French, I'd like to wring your neck. And it was amazing. The reach of these soap operas was extraordinary.
Allison had a flourishing career as a working actress, but her career path was destined to take a significant turn in the late 1980s.
Probably 5 years after I was on WKRP, I continued to do series and movies, television movies and pilots. And at the same time, I started learning about gorillas and their welfare in the wild, their survival in the wild, and also their welfare in captivity. And it just kept haunting me that I wanted to know more and make the lives better for these non-human animals. And when I met a gorilla named Ivan, who was living in a shopping mall in Tacoma, Washington, perfectly legally in basically a concrete box, not having seen another gorilla or the sun or the grass for 30 years, I was so shocked and appalled that that's really what motivated me to jump behind the camera.
Allison's passion to tell Ivan the gorilla's story led to the production of her first documentary, Urban Gorilla, and the creation of Argo Films.
I knew nothing about filmmaking. I'd never been to, you know, film school. But I just basically taught myself over the next 3 years how to make a documentary. And I ended up with a 1-hour documentary, and I was knocking on doors and ended up selling it to National, or completing it under National Geographic's roof. And it went on to win many awards, and we got that gorilla Ivan out of the shopping mall, and he joined other gorillas. And so that really opened up my true path, I think. And the rest, since then, my life really has been dedicated to speaking out for, you know, non-human animals who don't have a voice to speak out for themselves. Certainly not a voice that we can understand and recognize.
Make sure to check out the amazing work being done by Allison and Argo Films by visiting argofilms.com.
Thanks so much to Allison Argo for taking the time to talk with us about Family Affair. So that's going to do it for this episode of the WKRP cast. What's up for next week, Donna?
Next week, we'll be discussing Herb's dad. Herb's father visits the station to see his son. Herb Sr. is a born salesman, just like Herb Jr., and has run away from the retirement home where he was living. Herb Sr. wants his son to give him money so he can go to California.
I can't wait for a Herb-centered episode. This will be great. That's going to do it for this episode of the WKRP cast. If you'd like to watch along with us, make sure to check our show notes. Find us on social media. You can follow our Facebook page at WKRPcast.
Got a question, comment, or correction? Let us know about it. Write us WKRPcast@gmail.com.
And remember to please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
May the good news be yours. To the
WKRP cast is not endorsed by MTM Enterprises, Shout Factory, or CBS. This podcast is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. WKRP in Cincinnati, the WKRP logo, and all names, pictures, and audio of WKRP in Cincinnati characters are registered trademarks of MTM, CBS, Shout Factory, or their respective copyright holders.
Almost forgot, fellow babies. Booger!